That next year from my release was far from normal. When I was released, my system was still adjusting to its new configuration. My heart beat so hard and fast all the time. I had to learn to sleep on my right side. They put me on beta blockers, but I couldn't think on them. I could feel pulsing much of the time in the flesh of my left pectoral, not under my rib cage, but in the area of the muscle. I could rest my fingers there and feel the throbbing of my heartbeat. Sleep was taken care of by clonopin. Think I forgot to mention they prescribed risperidol for me after the whole arm-breaking thing. I got off that as quickly as I could. I also couldn't focus at first. We'd turn on the TV and I couldn't follow a program because my mind couldn't hang on to the words long enough to discover a plot. To this day, I have absolutely no memories of my discharge. I had some real panic attacks. This really shouldn't come as a surprise. If you take into account the fact that every hormone remotely or even possibly associated with a panic attack was now taking new orders, you can begin to imagine that just walking into a Schlotzky's and sitting down to have a sandwich could make me say, "I need to leave right now," as the world felt like it was closing in around me. Too noisy, too overpowering. And that really happened, folks. I went into a Schlotzky's, I sat down with my wife, and the world was too loud. Frankly, there was a lot that first year. It was kind of crazy, really. A little background is in order. I had moved to Tulsa while my fiancé stayed in Norman to finish college. At least that was the plan, right? So she basically had to quit her fall semester to move to Tulsa and get me back on my feet. I owe her a lot for that. I cannot imagine living with me that year or some of the transitional periods I would have in the future when the next domino fell. My system was adjusting. If I drank anything with sugar in it, I had to pee. Not the last time, folks. Right away, basically. But even that isn't right because this is when I experienced the polyuria again, but in a totally controllable way. I could go and think it was over and it would start again. Just like when I was in the random mental hospital, honestly. I learned to just go what I thought was a reasonable amount and stop because I wasn't sure it would stop. It certainly didn't seem like it. I can do a mass balance. I had determined that that was not a thing I needed to explore at that point with the limits. If I thought I hadn't gone enough lately, I'd drink a sugar drink. If not, I drank water because it never made me go. Instead, it just made me feel like my blood pressure was rising. Even still, my skin, it grew tight. The skin on my neck grew so tight that I looked like a little slea stack. It made me hunch over some, too. Everything was tight. Drowning. I think that's about when I noticed two things. Incoming weird. The first was that creepy crawly feeling I got in the random mental hospital when the candidiasis was moving through my bloodstream. Now it seemed to mostly happen around my ankles. But there were also these little head-like things that would just pop out of my skin. There weren't many, but I did manage to grab a hold of the end of one and determine it was more like a string than a rock. So it's getting weirder, right? The second thing I noticed that in the shower, my feet would swell. And then I'd have a mini attack of immediate polyuria, like my body was trying to purge the water it had somehow absorbed through the skin. So I decided to fight back on my terms. So I did what I always do. I pushed back. I joined a gym with a pool. I wasn't there to bulk up or do cardio, although that's what I told my wife. Yeah, we got married in the middle of that year. You should see how skinny I am in our wedding photos. I had one mission, get into the water and beat it. I jumped in, planning to swim a few laps. But the moment my body hit the water, it went into shock. I couldn't breathe. I felt like I was drowning from the inside out. My system locked up. It was yet another existential moment. Somehow, I dragged myself out and lay on the slick cement, heaving. Other people were there. I have no idea what they thought. I couldn't even focus on anything except breathe in and breathe out. And I'm going to stop right there and say, this sounds ridiculous. I get that. Okay? So once you finish the book and you come back and you learn about all the mechanisms involved, the suction of the heart, the how circulation changes and everything, now then take that and look and reevaluate what you just read, okay? It makes a lot more sense after you've been through everything. It's a lot easier to see. Eventually, I made it to the locker room where, true to form, I stood at the urinal for what felt like forever. That wasn't the end. I came back the next day. The one after. Eventually, I could swim 40 laps at a time because that's who I am. I wouldn't still be here if I hadn't. I'll say that this certainly felt like progress. I was exercising, which I continued religiously until much later. And the whole water situation seemed to be stabilizing. My skin wasn't as tight anymore. Admittedly, my feet were now half a size larger. I did find that a bit odd, but my feet had always been skinny. At first, I tied my shoes more loosely, but eventually, I went from 8.5 to 9. No biggie, right? And I'll just say an aside there, let's just say that I wasn't a 9 for real long. The next transition fixed that. So, personal research. Here, I'm going to go into some kind of random things, basically. And I don't really say that in the book. I just say, here's some things I decided to look into. Salts. Around this time, I also did some more research. You got to admit, you go through at that point, you know, what I've been through and nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. You got two choices, forget about it or figure it out. I decided to try to figure it out. First, I looked into salts. This condition, it was all about salts. So the question now became, how do I get rid of salts? Well, the only thing I found that wasn't a prescription and just happened to be freely available to everyone under the guise of productivity was caffeine. From what I could tell, caffeine binds to salts and carries them out of your system as waste. I think that's why they say it dehydrates you. If you've got less salt, you can't hold as much water. Weird, right? But it sounded useful. I had no idea if it would help or hurt or do nothing, especially with everyone always saying, if you've got a stomach problem, stay away from caffeine. I found another way too. I gave blood. And that's not in the book right here. I mention it later. But I actually had a card, and I remember having lots of punches on my card. I learned that I would get stressed and start feeling off. And if I went and gave blood, that feeling would go away. So I was pushing myself, and I gave blood up until my doctor said I was anemic one time. So that's all explained. Actually, I rewatched my first two videos that I recorded a couple of years ago, and that's all in there. And in fact, with a lot more detail than is here in the book, which is interesting because I wrote the book second. And so I had the detail, but then when Chat and I basically wrote the book together again, he adopted, you know, a much less verbose version, which is good because otherwise it would have been a forever long book. So, all right. But I drank Diet Dr. Pepper or Diet Pepsi at those awful restaurants with no taste until Coke Zero came out. Then they ruined that recipe. So I'm back to Diet Dr. Pepper. It's pretty much all I drink. Except for now, I also drink bone broth. And actually, since then, I have switched and I now drink a lot of Diet A&W root beer. So there you go. Three things. Those are the only three things I drink. The bone broth always have collagen in it. Yeah, weird. I did decide at age 40 that I'd start having a little coffee every day. One cup, no more, usually less. Next up, cholesterol and the pituitary. What does the pituitary actually do? How does it work? What makes it tick in normal people? Yeah, not me. By now, you've probably learned more about the pituitary than you ever thought you needed to know, and thankfully you don't, but I did. I found out it doesn't just make hormones. It makes little commanders, signalers, and more. It controls, creates, and causes the creation of a whole cascade of biochemical signals. That's my war, General. Receiving signals and sending orders down the line. But I knew my guy was getting tired. I could feel it. And I figured if he was still going to hold the line, he'd need more ammo. So I started asking, what does the pituitary use to build those hormones? What's the raw material? I guess we're down to first principles here, right? My assumption was that it would need more of something, more building blocks. And that's when the research pointed to something unexpected, cholesterol. At first, that didn't compute. Cholesterol? Really? But then you look at what it's made of, amino acids and lipids, and suddenly it makes more sense. It's not the villain, it's the foundation. And if you start asking AI about this, and I did, and you keep pushing past the surface answers, and I did, eventually it admits this. Quote, you are absolutely correct. Your body can break down cholesterol and convert it into steroid hormones. Cholesterol is the precursor molecule for all steroid hormones. This means that the basic structure of cholesterol is used as a foundation to build hormones like sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, glucocorticoids, cortisol, mineral corticoids, aldosterone. The conversion happens through a series of enzyme-catalyzed reactions, primarily in endocrine glands like the adrenal cortex and gonads. Yikes! Out of curiosity, I asked the obvious question. Here are both. So, do men have more of some hormones because of the gonads using cholesterol to create them? I mean, I was vamping here, folks. Yes, that's the reason why men generally have much higher levels of certain hormones and specific androgens like testosterone compared to women. So, I eat eggs every day. Every day. I eat beef. My war general is in a constant state of war and needs solid supply lines. Not medical advice. You are not me. 1996. Summer. That next summer, so we're about 6 to 8 months out from the random mental hospital, I went a step further in my fight. I still couldn't focus as well as I should, and it was definitely related to eating sugary things. The internet was basically AOL. That means America Online for you kids. And some really bad websites. But there were chat boards. I found conversations about people with symptoms of fogginess and other weirdness and discussions about candidiasis. Most of the people recommended a sugar-free diet and an initial purge period where you took a strong fungicide. So I started poking around for a doctor that believed in such things. This was not a standard approach for most physicians. But the guys on the edge that maybe shouldn't be practicing medicine for some reason were more willing to accept patients with strange ideas. Some of those docs were open to the idea. I was living in Tulsa, but I got connected to a guy in Norman who believed in such things. So I made an appointment, and I went to see Dr. Quack. I remember the appointment was weird. There was definitely a divining rod involved at some point. But I described it in as much detail as I could. Scroll up, think about what you can fit in 3 to 5 minutes. That's the version he got. Then he prescribed me ketoconazole, the go-to antifungal back then, before fluconazole took over. Ketoconazole was powerful, but also dangerous. The liver risks were well known, but I didn't care. I was willing to take the risk. It was the first moment a professional put their pen to paper and acknowledged that what I was describing might be real. That alone made it feel like a win. I filled the prescription and began what I now see as my first medicinal step in a war that I didn't know would last decades. I took the first pill as soon as we got the prescription filled. Within 30 minutes, probably less, my heart was racing. My mind was clear, crystal clear. The racing pulse thing worried me, though. So I went straight back to the doctor, and I asked him if I was okay. Evidently, I was. The racing pulse subsided within days, and I found myself so incredibly hungry. I would get second and third helpings at dinner, and then I didn't feel full. But now I could think again. Honestly, maybe better than ever. There were a couple of changes. It made my skin produce that yellow film again. Not as dramatically, but it was there. I could stain a shirt sweating one time. After a run, my socks were nasty. If you're thinking all socks after a run are nasty, you're wrong. Later on, when my body had undergone even more changes, I would hardly sweat during a run. But that's 20 plus years in the future from this point. Here I should share more of the article. Let's turn it up. You see, this condition I had, it changes everything. Hormones, circulation, the heart itself. That constriction in the inferior vena cava, that causes a back pressure on the heart. Since everything coming out of the heart has to have the same pressure, this means the flow rate to my brain, which was not constricted, increased. Cool, huh? That additional energy and oxygenation are what make it virtually impossible for me to pass out. There are other advantages too. Those changes in the immune system, they cause an augmentation of some phagocytic process. The end result is that the bacterial infections are no longer an issue. Viruses, sure. Fungus, obviously. Bacteria, nope, they get gobbled up. Recovery from a serious burn? No worries of infection. I think it was about 2017 when I tested that theory. And here, I'll give you the full thing because, hey, we're telling it all, right? So I had just been divorced and I got back into my house after a couple years and I was curious and decided to burn my arm, my forearm, on the oven to see if my skin theories were true. And everybody out there is going to condemn that, and every doctor is going to say that's immoral or whatever. And to me, it's science. And my theory proved I substantially burned my arm, didn't need to do anything about it, and it healed very quickly. That same part, however, enables the candidiasis to remain hidden, because if it does get angry and happen to rupture some cell, that cell, it gets eaten up too. I did my best over the years to combat the possibility I had the illness by always staying in shape, running, lifting, giving blood during the first phase when potassium is accumulating, trying to avoid sugar, well, that had some phases, alcohol, and a certain trip to the top of Pike's Peak that I knew would cause issues, as the article mentioned that elevation changes could exacerbate things, or in one instance, reset the level of something, I don't remember exactly, but it was a good outcome if you could pull it off. I remember that much. So I thought we'd go. That's who I am, right? Sorry. I drank water as we boarded the lift that would take us to 14,115 feet above sea level, thinking it would help. I had been a couple times before, but I honestly thought I might die on this particular trip. There is a certain grace you get by having so many existential crisis moments that one more isn't anything special. I wasn't as calm as I would be now, but I doubt anyone could see that I thought I might die. My face was red before we got to the top. I felt like I was being squeezed, like my head would pop off. Honestly, I don't know exactly what went on. I made it down alive. That seemed like a victory. The polyuria returned some, and I kept avoiding sugar. It finally reached a point where I just ate everything I knew I shouldn't, and there was this wonderful, rewarding feeling. It was a bit of a high I had. It was rather dramatic being Thanksgiving Day meal at a huge house of a family member of at the foot of the Rockies. I remember we stayed in a farmhouse built in the 1800s. We'd walk up to the main house. That's ancient to someone from Oklahoma. I also remember losing my footing on the extremely steep and narrow oak stairwell, sliding down basically half a floor on my ass. It hurt a lot. No bruise. Not one.